So with that, we'll invite our brother Jason Hensley to give us the introduction for this morning.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Thursday. How are you? Good? You're feeling good? I'm glad to hear that. So, we have now approached the Exodus part of our Exodus study. So we get to talk this morning in our first group about Passover, and then the parting of the Red Sea and crossing through it. So Passover has tons of things to talk about. So I tried to just choose a couple for you. Here are some that you might want to pay specific attention to. As far as the practical are concerned, on page 17, question number one, you have this idea of Passover being a memorial for them, right? And I think it's a useful thing to actually try and compare, well, how similar was their Passover to our Passover, right? Our memorial that we have every week. And in fact, what lessons can we learn then from their Passover to apply to our weekly memorial service, right? What basis does our memorial service find in their Passover, and what can we learn from that? So that's something that you might find useful to talk about. If you skip over two more pages to page 19, and I believe since we've started section 2, I think I'm actually on the same page numbers as you, which is exciting. In the section on the Feast of Unleavened Bread, this is question 3A. I thought this was an interesting opportunity to talk a little bit about boundaries. Because the question asks, 3A, why did God emphasize the command not to even have leaven in the house when the true intent applied to the actual eating of the leaven? Now, I also stuck this on here. However, compare Genesis chapter 3, because we have that event in which Eve says, "Neither shall ye touch it," about the fruit. So you seem to have this boundary here about the leaven, and that seems good, but you have Eve with her boundary that, you know, didn't seem to work out all that good when she said, "Neither shall you touch it." She touches the fruit, nothing happens, and she goes on, perhaps to eat it. Well, not perhaps to eat it, she does go on to eat it. But perhaps that had to do with her saying, "Neither shall you touch it." So you might, I think you can have a healthy discussion here about boundaries and when they're useful, when they're not. On the same page, the next question down, your overachiever question, it's 4A, B, C, D, and E. This is one that might be a little prickly because it's all about looking at 1 Corinthians 5. This is a very useful situation for us to consider because it's about disfellowship. And yet, in 1 Corinthians 5, the Apostle Paul very clearly lays out the two reasons for disfellowship. So he says, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Therefore, purge yourself of the leaven. Right? So essentially, on one hand, you have disfellowship for the purpose of getting rid of this leavening agent, right? What's going on in 1 Corinthians 5 is somebody's going around sleeping with his mother-in-law, right? That's like really bad. And telling everybody about it. You know, "Woo, look what I'm doing." And Paul says, "You cannot have that in the ecclesia. That's really not good. So get rid of them," right? At the same time, he says, "Deliver them unto Satan so that they may be saved," right? So that's the idea as well. So you have getting rid of the leaven in the ecclesia, that's one reason for disfellowship, and the other is ultimately in hopes that they will be brought back. And I think that this particular instance in 1 Corinthians 5 is useful because you can also compare it to 2 Corinthians 1 when you essentially have the end result of this situation where the person is actually restored back into fellowship. So I think you could have a healthy discussion on the reasons for disfellowship, how disfellowship kind of works, and also refellowship. So you can spend some time talking on that. Here's your exposition question. It's page 22, closing questions, question number one. If you read through 1 Peter, that should say 1 Peter, it's chapters 1 and 2. So 1 Peter chapters 1 and 2, there's a number of Passover allusions. You'll see things like, ready, I'm going to give you one. You'll see things like, "Gird up the loins of your mind," right? Have you ever wondered why Peter says that? Like, whose mind has loins? I mean, come on. Like, what's that mean? but it's because he's thinking Passover. Gird up the loins of your mind. So look for those Passover allusions, and then talk with each other. Why do you think they're there? Why do you think Peter has all these Passover connections? And what's really interesting is they stop at 1 Peter 2, verse 9. So that's also an interesting thing to consider. Why do they stop? 1 Peter 2, 9. Okay, so group number two. We're looking now at Exodus 13 and 14. Unfortunately, you don't get to talk about the redemption of the firstborn and the breaking of the donkey's neck and all those things. They're interesting, but we're going to stick to the story here of the crossing of the Red Sea. So, here's your practical ideas. On page 25, the section is, so they were very afraid. It's question number four. The people complain, and notice your italics here, to Moses rather than to God. A lot of times, this is what happened. Not that the people should have complained to God, but that they should have gone to God. You know, God's the one who's in control, not Moses, right? So, I think we can really benefit here from sharing strategies that we use to stop ourselves from complaining. Complaining is probably one of the most absolute toxic things in the ecclesia, right? Somebody comes along and they have this plan of this preaching, you know, campaign that they want to do, and the next person says, oh, well, you know, we can't do that. It's too much work, da-da-da-da-da, and all of a sudden, no preaching campaign ever happens, right? Complaining destroys ecclesias. So, what strategies have you found to be helpful in combating complaining, not in other people, in yourself, combating complaining in yourself and instead causing you to turn to God? So just talk about that. See if you can share some helpful strategies, some useful things that you've done. Page 28, do not be afraid. That's your section, and it's question 4A and B. Moses responded to the people when they complained, but think about how he responded. He didn't say, you people are so lame, I just brought you out of Egypt, come on. He doesn't say that, right? And he very well could have, but he doesn't. So talk about some principles of spiritual leadership that you see in his response. Along those same lines, page 29, tell the children of Israel to go forward. Question A, God actually attributes the faithless cry of the Israelites to Moses. Think about, again, principles of spiritual leadership and responsibility there. All right, you get two exposition questions. Bonus question. Here's your bonus one, because it's not in the workbook. So if you want extra credit, here it is. It is, compare Exodus 14 and Psalm 46. And in fact, you can even expand that, because Psalm 46 not only has Exodus 14 and the Red Sea connections, it actually connects to the whole Exodus story. There's a lot of Exodus allusions in Psalm 46. However, here's the question. It's generally understood that Psalm 46 was written during Hezekiah's day. So what's the Exodus doing in Psalm 46? And specifically, what's the Red Sea crossing doing in Psalm 46? So think about that. You can look for some of those. I'll give you a hint on one of them. Look at Psalm 46, verse 10, and I think you'll see a major connection there. Psalm 46, verse 10, you'll see a major connection with the Red Sea crossing. All right, here's your final question, your final exposition question. The Red Sea and Passover basically like connect all throughout the Bible. You know, there's little links going, choom, choom, you know, and connecting all these passages. So we have a lot of connection ideas. So it's page 31 in the closing questions. It's question 1A. 2 Chronicles 20 is about Jehoshaphat. And in 2 Chronicles 20, there are once again a number of throwbacks, allusions, to the crossing of the Red Sea. If your group is, you know, really into finding all these connections, look, you could do it three times today. So take a look for those. If you're intrigued by that thought, try to find a few of these connections, and again, ask yourselves why they're here, right? Scripture does not make these connections, it doesn't make these allusions haphazardly. There is a reason for them, and they're not only is a reason just because it's cool, but there's actually a reason that is supposed to be a lesson to teach us something. So really, while these are exposition questions, I think they're exposition questions that should lead to something that impacts your life. So, there you go. There's some things for you to kick around, some things to think about, some food for thought. Enjoy.